Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hello everyone and welcome to the Phileas Club. This is episode number 54 for March 2015. Hello everyone and welcome to the Phileas Club. This is a show where we gather people from different parts of the world around the globe, spanning multiple time zones, and we discuss things that have been happening in the past couple of, just 1 month. And hopefully what we get out of this hodgepodge of podcasting discussion and happy group of friends is different perspectives on different events. That's the hope. And today, I'm sure we're going to accomplish our goals because we have a couple of wonderful, amazing, fantastic co-hosts. I was trying to elicit a reaction there. We have Scott Johnson and Turkey on the show. I can say your last name now. You've made this public, Turkey, right?
Oh, yeah. You can say it.
So we have, on the western side of the world, Scott Johnson in his home state of Firing Squad, Utah.
Oh, good Lord, yes.
And on the eastern side, Turkey Albala, who is actually now taxed, apparently, or something.
Oh yeah, this is a huge deal in Saudi. You guys are just gonna look at me and say, "Are you serious, dude?"
Well, you know, it's funny. We'll discuss it later on the show. But someone just tweeted yesterday from the last show a remark you made about taxation. Yeah. Something about asking what. Taxes? What? what happens when you don't have gas? I don't understand. And it was Alicia on Twitter, and that made me laugh retroactively. So now you're taxed. Apparently, it's going to be fun.
Wow!
Oh, not me. Personally, I won't be taxed. Don't worry.
It's amazing what a week's difference can make in the
yeah.
world.
Yeah. Well, a month, but yeah.
Or I guess a month. Yeah. Good point.
Yeah.
And Scott is just catching up. Come on, Firing Squad, that's old news. We've been doing that for a while now.
Yeah, we'll get to that. It's a really weird deal, and it's so specific to my city, or well, my state. The city is actually kind of up in arms about it, but the state of Utah and its goofiness, we'll get to it. It's more complicated than people think, so I will say that, but we'll get into that when we get there.
It usually is, you know? That's the... If doing, I don't know, 5 years, 4 years of the Phileas Club has taught me anything, it's that basic nugget of wisdom that you learn in, you know, like second grade. It's usually more complicated than people think.
Yeah.
So I'm not at the top of my form, so I apologize in advance to the listeners if I'm less energetic than I usually am. I've had family trouble and I almost canceled the show actually, but I figured, you know what? The Patreon patrons have put in their hard-earned cash into this show and I owe it to them to create content. So I'm here. That's one of my, as we were discussing before the show, I never cancel things, and that's one of my failings.
Patrick just marches on. Doesn't look back.
The Patrick just marches on. I think the Patrick should take the time to sit down every once in a while, but not today. Yeah. Not today.
And also, I'm going to refer to you as the Patrick from now on, Alec.
that's I could live with that. So we're also going to try something just a little bit different with this show. I figured instead of me dictating what the international stories are, I figured we'd all of the people on the show would select one or two local stories, or not necessarily local, but rather stories that made news in their local, in their country or state or whatever that is. And the thing that occupied the headlines, so that we try and get a picture of what's been making the news here and there. And I think unless we have some major news that does become the center of attention for the world, or at least we can reasonably assume it's the center of attention for the world in future episodes, I think we might keep this format. But we'll see how it works out. For now, anyway, I guess I'm going to go first, as I usually do. And we're going to talk about one thing that happened very recently. It was only a few days ago. And I think if that hadn't happened, the main topic would have been the departmental elections, which I'll get to a little bit more quickly afterwards. But the main topic since 3 days ago has definitely been that German Wings crash in France. German Wings is a plane company, flight, how do you even call that thing?
Airline.
Thank you, Scott.
So I'm here.
It's an airline, and they had a plane crash a few days ago in the Alps. And it was, so obviously it took a little while to guess what had happened. And I'm guessing that most of you guys have heard about this, although Scott apparently hadn't when we were discussing pre-show.
No, when was the actual crash? Like, time? What's the timeline on this thing?
I can't remember exactly. I think it was 3 days ago on 25th or 26th.
Well, and one of the problems I have is that this is the kind of story that would make it on, like, national 24-hour news networks, right? This is where I would normally hear it. And I have given those up for years now. I hate them terribly. I think they're awful.
Here's the recommendation, Scott. It's called BBC.
Right. BBC is good. I love BBC. I love NPR. Like, there's places I get my stuff, but I get so much of it delayed or via podcast or something else that sometimes something will miss my radar. And, of course, you know, I'm checking the web and stuff. But this seems like one I would have seen, and I'm a little shocked that I hadn't.
I guess it's a little bit local, but ultimately, I think in the first day it was disbelief. We didn't understand what happened. And immediately, at least for me, so it was a passenger plane, no survivors. It crashed in the Alps in a mountainous area. Absolutely tragic story, as those always are. But initially, I think a lot of the people, without saying it, were on the back of the Charlie Hebdo attacks, fearful that this would be a terrorist attack. And there was no indication that it would be the case, so it didn't even really get mentioned so much. It was just, you know, I think the media did a pretty responsible job not randomly asking the question, you know, what if it's a terrorist attack and what did we do wrong? And there was none of that. It was very respectful, waiting to have the first elements of the investigation. Unspoken sort of the fear of that was palpable, at least in what I felt. And the one of the reasons is that that might be a little bit more personal. It's that the terrorist attacks have become an excuse or a reason to propose more draconian laws, surveillance laws, which everyone in the tech industry is very much against and can see a million holes in. But of course, since the fear of terrorism is being instrumentalized and people also don't really understand a lot about these topics, it seems like these laws might be voted. But anyway, that was really the background of this whole thing for me. Mm. And that was stage one. And then stage two was when we ended up piecing the pieces of the puzzles together and found out that what had actually happened, for those who don't know, was the two pilots were in the cockpit, and both of them had a lot of training. They had several thousand hours on the plane, or at least the main pilot. But at some point, he got up and left to go to the restroom. And when he tried to come back, the door was locked and the guy on the other side didn't open it. So you could hear on the, you know, there's the black box with the recording of everything that they found. And apparently you could hear on the black box, on the recording, the guy outside banging on the door, trying to open it, trying to force it open. And of course, since 9/11, you have those doors that are unbreakable. So he couldn't get in. And it seems that the co-pilot had been prone to depression. And the most likely explanation at this point is that the guy was just committed suicide and murder, you know, 122 or 23 or whatever it is, counts of murder with him. He just took everyone down. Yeah. So that's obviously incredibly depressing and a sad story. And you know, it's a terrible story, but...
Well, it's funny. You said earlier, like, the first feeling that everybody seemed, or everyone's knee-jerk reaction now is, ooh, this could be a terrorist thing. Like, just two, three days ago, something like that, there was a explosion in New York City. A building exploded, was on fire, and collapsed. And it was a pretty big deal in terms of its, you know, how big it was and stuff. And, of course, everybody's first thoughts, feelings, and, you know, everything is like, oh, no, there's a bomb. Oh, no, there's a terrorist. Oh, no, there's a whatever. And that's how the news organizations treat it. It's how everybody on the scene is treating it. And it turned out to be a gas leak and a you know, a bad gas line and an explosion that was purely an accident. But it is always the first thing that people jump to. And I don't know how you get around that. I don't know how we ever not have that happen. You know,
it's interesting, though, because what you're saying is, in your case, in the US's case, the news did treat this through the terrorist angle.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think so. I shouldn't say all of them, but a lot of the stuff I heard was very terrorist angle.
I don't think in the case of the plane, for us, it wasn't the case. As I was saying, it was very unspoken in the background. Everyone was sort of silently wondering, but the media did a pretty good job at not, you know, giving into that fear or giving into that sensationalist headline. I don't remember seeing any headline or anyone mentioning this as a serious, like, riling people up or even serious consideration. It was barely mentioned, if at all. So
that's how it's supposed to be, Patrick. Otherwise, that terrorist actually won. If the first thing in the media goes for terrorist attack, they won. They won the war.
Yeah,
we're living in fear of them 24/7. Then how are we going to survive anymore?
There's also a layer below that, which is the part I don't like the most, and that is that I don't know that people would necessarily jump to the conclusion, if there's an explosion or a gas leak or whatever, that was a terrorist act. My problem is that it isn't even out of fear that the major 24-hour news networks are reporting it as possibly a terrorist attack. They're not doing it out of fear. They're doing it out of get ahead of this story, sensationalize it as quick as you can, make it, make it so that everyone's watching us. And if we're right, boy, we sure struck gold, because now everyone will be paying attention to us. And if we get it wrong, well, oh well, we always get it wrong. So who cares?
Like, because everyone does.
Yeah, it's a cash grab or a viewer grab or a whatever grab at those levels. I'm not sure it's even happening on the bottom level. But then the problem is that, you know, perpetuates so that the people who are actually afraid aren't the news organizations. It's the people watching those channels who are riveted because they're being told to be afraid. And that's where I get, that's where my big disconnect is and where I get real angry.
I completely agree. And especially with what you're saying, Turkey, it's, you know, I've been making that argument for a while now. The terrorists, as violent and as effective as they are, they don't have an army and they can never actually physically overcome the countries they're attacking. They cannot win militarily, quote unquote. They can't kill us all. They can't even kill enough of us to make a dent in anything. They can kill enough of us to make us afraid. The only thing they can do is make us afraid. And that's their end goal, right?
No,
they want us to change who
terrorists.
We are. Yeah,
and that's
exactly.
Why they're
called
terrorists.
Exactly.
They are here to do terror.
To instill terror.
Yeah,
and
that's it.
And they are trying to make us change who we are. And that's how they win. And that is indeed, I mean, in the case of the U.S., it seems that they're having more of an effect than in France, at least if this German wings crash is any indication to go by. It seems that the French journalists had at least enough sense of responsibility to not sensationalize that story. So that makes me a little bit more hopeful, I suppose.
For the U.S., I'm actually starting to think the terrorists won the war in the U.S. If you're living in terror and you're thinking about every single thing is about terrorism, and if you look at some of their politicians, it's just freaky how easy it is to scare people and use scare tactics.
Well, I wouldn't throw make that remark about the U.S. only, because certainly in France, the laws being proposed for mass surveillance are appalling, and they do change who we are as a democracy, and you know it does infringe on our freedoms. So they are having an effect here as well. So I wouldn't cast the blame, or not the blame, but point the finger at the U.S.
It's kind of everywhere.
Only.
It's kind of everywhere. And there's different levels of it and stuff. But also, it is like I say, it's very much a certain, you know, ring in a much thicker tree. It's a terrible analogy, but whatever. It's sensationalist sensationalism and journalism together holding hands. And it's I guess there are going to be people who are loyal to those news organizations in a way that maybe somebody is loyal to a soccer team or something, and so they're going to take whatever they say as gospel. But it's not. Most of us are annoyed by it. I mean. Yeah. I hate to always speak for anybody in any large group.
That's what we do on this show, so
sure,
feel free.
I guess so. I'm representing the Americans here. And the prevailing point of view is everybody calm down and look at the facts before you start making sensational.
You know, it's interesting. It's not the first time I've noticed this. And you're not the first person who said it. There seems to be a very serious disconnect between at least the people I'm talking to, and maybe I'm talking to the wrong people, or, well, the right people, my American friends. There seems to be a disconnect between the way the news treats these things, and even the politicians to an extent, and the actual people. I'm wondering if it's not, a horse that's gone wild, and that's just... that doesn't stop, and everyone who was running after it has sort of slowed down and is looking at one another and going like, all right, you know what, maybe we should calm down, and maybe the urgency has sort of stopped.
And the horse
doesn't stop because it doesn't know how to, or something like that.
Yeah, I would agree with that. That's a great analogy, and it's a lot like this. This is the comparison I use. In the 40s and 50s, let's say, in early, late radio, early television years, when a commercial would come on the air, you really did believe that Lucky Strike cigarettes were going to change your life, and 4 out of 5 doctors agreed, and whatever. Like, you bought into whatever they were hawking, whether it was Coca-Cola or the brand new fridge you needed to have, the Frigidaire in your own home, and every housewife in the world will want one. And you went, yeah, they would, and I do, and I can't wait.
Well, actually, the fridge is kind of a revolutionary health issue.
Fair enough. But you know what I mean? Like there's a facade there. And then you eventually, everyone just got cynical and went, well, wait, this is all just a bunch of hooey. You're just hawking. You're no different than the guy trying to sell me a fake handbag in Tijuana. You're just, this is all fake and you don't believe it anymore. And commercials have less and less effect, and you start to see different ways of people marketing things and different levels of sort of, I believe in what you're doing because you actually deliver, or you're just talking about it real loud or whatever. I feel like there's that kind of thing happens eventually with journalism. It's the tale as old as time. You can only cry wolf so many times. And if there's no wolf, people stop believing you. So there's a credibility issue, and people are now getting to a stage where, you know, we're far enough away from 9/11, I think, which was a seismic thing in this country, to look back and go, yeah, that was bad and that was terrible, but, you know, let's have some reason here, and let's quit towing this line that we all need to be, you know, freaking out constantly all the time. It's just difficult to see it, as always, from other, you know, probably other places, because again, the voices are so loud. These networks are so, you know, far flung. The sound bites you can get off of Fox News any given day are so ridiculous that it makes it seem like we're all bananas. But it's just, it really is this weird fringy element. It's almost as fringy as the terrorists themselves in a lot of ways. Mm.
So how was it, how did it sound in Saudi Arabia?
Saudi Arabia is basically, I've never heard anything about terrorism about it. I'm sure some people
reporting on the German wings crash.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah, German wings crash, and I'm sure some people thought about it at first, but it wasn't mentioned in the media. However, of course, it's sensational. So the media has tried to link it indirectly. You remember one of the media outlets actually reporting that ISIS has declared that the co-pilot was a hero of ISIS and he was representing them. So apparently
they did. Actually, I didn't even see that.
No, I don't know if that's what the media said. I never saw that.
Yeah, who knows? And even if they did, they like doing that too, though. Like, that's an ISIS thing.
Oh, yeah, of course. Of course, I'm sure.
Yeah, we were in charge of that freaking Suez line. That's right. Yeah.
No, of course. But I mean, I'm sure they said it. I just didn't see that. So it must have very little legitimacy so that the French media didn't really report on it seriously either.
Yeah, but, and I only saw it, as far as I know, in one outlet, and it was a local Arab outlet. A day later, the media came out that apparently he was depressed, and it looks like it was a suicide. And so it's just, in Saudi, I think it's, terrorism is a big deal in Saudi, but it's less of a, then when in the way people react to it in France or in the US, because terrorism here is more targeted from your own people are targeting you. So when you have most of the terrorism right now in the world are Islamic terrorism. Of course, not all terrorism is Islamic terrorism. There's terrorism from every aspect of the world and every faith and so on. But it's so linked to Islamic terrorism right now that for us it's basically a fight between Muslims and Muslims and so on. So there's a kind of a different reaction of how things are handled or how things are seen here.
It's funny because I shouldn't say it's funny, but it's like this thing with this plane.
Interesting. Just say it's interesting.
It's interesting. This thing with the plane, it's like on the one hand you're like, well, we need to make sense of it, and if they were terrorists, while terrorists still don't make sense to us, but then we at least could make sense of this because terrorists are involved and they're crazy and they don't know what, you know, there's no sense there. But then now that we know it's not, and we know it's just a guy who was apparently incredibly depressed, there's something here on Google News saying that the pilot was dumped by his girlfriend a day before the crash, and maybe that had led something to do with it. But regardless of any of those facts, now we're all just scratching our head going, it's still senseless, and we can't understand how a guy, no matter how depressed he would be, with thousands of hours of flight experience, would do something like this. Like, now it's even more perplexing. At least a terrorist had a cause, a flag to wave, of something that he could claim as a mantra. And this is a guy who potentially had just this, there was no sense to it at all.
Yeah, except if you want to kill yourself, just kill yourself. I take 150 people with you.
That's almost worse than terrorism, you know. It's really frustrating.
I also saw in the news today that his girlfriend said that he mentioned that he will make sure the entire world knows his name.
Well, hopefully we don't say his name too much because obviously all right, we could discuss this I think as a conclusion, the when we ended up realizing what had happened, there's as much lack of any form of understanding of that as there was sadness, you know, immense sadness everywhere. So Anyway, the other thing that was making the news in the country of France for the past month was the departmental elections. And the departmental elections are very local elections, honestly. It's the kind of election... We have so many administrative layers in France. I don't think anyone really knows what the department does, or at least what the department elections are good for.
You do need to pay salaries to people, so you just make up jobs.
Exactly. So we have, we have the city and the department and the region and then the country. So there's... And all of these are somewhat independent, and there are other bodies. And anyway, the department elections are probably the least interesting / important of any. And the reason they were getting so much play is, well, I guess, first of all, because they're still elections. But the other reason is that the far right party, the Front National, National Front, was poised to get possibly the biggest... to become the first party in that election. There was, studies and surveys that put it at about 30% of the vote intentions above the UMP, which is the right-wing party, or the PS, Parti Socialiste, Socialist Party, which is the left-wing party. And there are the two main parties, even though we have others. So there's so much discontent, especially for the current government, which is left-wing, that the National Front is, it's definitely far right. It's there are a lot of people saying it's anti-Republican and things like that. I don't quite buy that. They're definitely far right, and they want to get out of the euro. They want to regulate immigration a lot more harshly and all of that. So there might be, racist elements in their ranks, and they're on the border sometimes. But so that's why it was a big deal. And it follows a lot of... European political landscapes in the past few years, where the far right has become similarly important. And it's not quite a first in France, but in those local elections, the National Front is definitely very well represented. In the end, they got, I think, 25% of the votes. They got just below the right wing party, the Conservatives. But we're all curious to find out what happens on the second turn this weekend. And there's still a possibility that they come ahead. It's not, they will get some some parts of the country through departments and such. So it's not like they are getting massive representation at the, National Assembly or the government or anything like that. But it's still something that we're... half concerned, has half observing, and it's obviously with the presidential elections in 2017, that's the biggest outlook, and we're wondering if it is an indication of what's going to happen for the presidential elections.
It sounds a lot like congressional elections here, because what they'll do, because they stagger those. So there's a presidential election, then 4 years later, or I guess it's 2 years later, there's
2 years,
congressional stuff. And then that often, not always, but sometimes will have major implications as to which party will win the presidency or will, likely take office. So I could see how those, I imagine it's no different there, where, those ideologies and or implementations or whatever they're planning on doing, that stuff has implications for who will become the next president of France.
It's more of a taking the temperature of the country, because we also have, the National Assembly and all of those. But this is something different again. But
how many parties, active parties, participate in national, local, election type stuff there? You guys have a lot more than us, I think, because we're two effectively, and then three or four that are kind of impotent, but... you guys have got a huge amount, right?
We have the two main parties that always end up being the bulk of the power, that's for sure. But we do have a lot more other parties. And, well, kind of, it's sad, but this National Front is one of the main contenders now. The center party is not as strong as it used to, but we also have Green Party and a couple of actually communist parties that are, you know, far left, that are not an actual power, but they make a lot of noise and they have a few percentage of the votes every time.
Hey, look at the bright side, Patrick. At least you have multiple parties. Unlike the US, they only have two.
Hey, we've got the Green Party and the freaking Independents.
But they don't do anything.
They don't do anything. Are they represented in Congress?
They often come in and sometimes will... What they end up doing is splitting the vote in a lot of cases. So
yeah.
The most famous example would have been Clinton versus Bush Senior. And... Or no, Clinton. I'm sorry, Clinton versus... Was it Gore? I guess Gore. Well, it's not Gore. Freaking the other guy. Bob Dole. There you go. Anyway, may have been Bush Senior. I'm thinking of, but anyway. So what's his name comes in, the independent Ross Perot, who was like, well, I don't believe either side's got represents what I think, and he said I'm going to be an independent. And what he effectively did was split the conservative vote, so that Clinton ran away with it. And if there were no Ross Perot, it's very likely that Bush Senior would have won that election with it, like by a landslide. So that's what usually happens. If one of those guys becomes a big enough influencer, he just comes in and splits the vote, which is not necessarily what either party wants, either prominent party. I mean, I would love to see a more prominent third party, fourth party in our system of government. But there are some who would argue, and I can kind of see their point, there's a real simplicity to fighting it out. But philosophically, it's hard to agree with that.
Yeah, it's. I mean, sometimes simplicity is not the thing to wish for. In France, we have, I would say, so in the presidential elections, it's kind of unconceivable that another party would win the presidential election. However, in our equivalent of Congress, I don't have the exact numbers, but I would guess the two parties represent about 70% of the seats. So the other parties, maybe a little bit more, but you know, it's not 95 or 99. So the other parties have some measure of power. So it's a little bit different.
So you're looking forward to voting for Jacques Chirac?
The next election is the next presidential election is going to be interesting, actually, because it's probably going to be Sarkozy against Hollande, so it's a rematch of the 2012 election, and I think a lot of people don't want Sarkozy to come back, but even more people are very frustrated with Hollande. So I'm not sure how it's going to turn out. But
you're going to get a lesser of two evils kind of vote, probably.
Yeah, I don't know if any of them is you know, could be counted as an evil per
well,
se.
Not evil.
But
the one
no, but least, you know, I know the expression.
Yeah, you're least disappointed with, I suppose. But
I guess yeah, that's what I guess people are going to vote with. You know, ultimately, I'm guessing people who are leaning left are going to vote against Sarkozy, and people who are leaning right are going to vote against Hollande because they don't believe in their policy. But with the, you know, Hollande's approval rating has been, it went back up a little bit after the Charlie Hebdo, but it went so low as like, I can't remember, it was like 13 or 17, which is, it's unheard of. He messed up everything in people's minds. So
no, not doing well that way. By the way, the split vote example hits me hard last year. And so I'll just give you this example. I had two podcasts up for podcast awards, The Instance and The Final Score. Neither won. Why? Because we split the freaking vote. It's the worst. If people come in and they vote for one half and one to the other half, and that means somebody else with all the halves got beat us. So there you go.
That is a terrible tragedy, Scott. And
it really
I invite
is.
You to rally behind your party of podcasting. Yeah. Actually, the podcasting party, that would be pretty cool.
Oh, everyone's invited to the
podcast. Do you want to compete with the pirate? party?
Actually, the pirate party got in the latest survey in Iceland. They're the first party in Iceland.
Yeah, it's Iceland's That's weird though. Cool. They're weird.
Yeah,
there.
Yeah, it is weird.
Like,
it
I don't mean weird. They're weird personally. They're all very nice, but it's just it's a weird. So like, the country's biggest corporation is Eve Online, for heaven's sakes.
You know, I can't remember if I mentioned this on the show before, but there are so few of them concentrated in basically in Reykjavik. They have an app to figure out if they're cousins in order to, you know, when they hook up after having drunk in a bar, they have to check that they're not cousins before they hook up. And it's an actual thing. It's not a joke.
I've heard this before, yeah.
It's,
I can't even imagine, but it's a beautiful place with a really big...
Oh, I'd love to go there.
Yeah. It basically, CCP party is the one I'm looking to vote for next because they own everything.
They'd get my vote as well, I'm sure.
Yeah.
All right. Let's move on to Saudi Arabia and what's been happening there.
Is that how you say it in French, Saudi Arabia?
Saudi Arabia, yeah. You just say Saudi?
No, I thought you'd call it Arabia Saudi.
Arabie Saoudite in France. In French, it's Arabie Saoudite.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah. Well, I can put insert, you know, French pronunciations and words in my English if you want to make you happy.
Sure. Saudi Arabia. So the biggest news right now is the war in Yemen. A quick introduction. Yemen, apparently there's the minority Shiite movement called Houthis. They've been doing a movement against the government of Yemen, and they overthrew it in the capital, Sana'a, and they are being supported by the ex-president of Yemen, Ali Abdullah Saleh, who was deposed in 2011 in an agreement that was supervised by the GCC countries. And the current president ran away to Aden, the southern second biggest city in the country, where he started his government from there. And the Houthis have been moving so rapidly to the south that they're almost about to take it over. Apparently, Saudi Arabia decided it is time, after the call of the Yemeni president for help, that they need to move in to stop the Houthis from taking over the country. And 3 days ago, Saudi Arabia went to war in Yemen with the support of the GCC countries, Egypt, Sudan, Jordan, and Pakistan, and Morocco. So basically, right now, Saudi Arabia is at war in Yemen. The entire war is based on airstrikes at the moment, but there are words that we might actually move land troops into the country.
So this is how big the German wings thing was. I didn't hear about it once in France. I'm sure it was reported on, but it didn't reach me. Yeah. So
it's a huge deal. It's officially a war effort, and Saudi Arabia has committed 100 fighter jets, airplanes of different types, and 150,000 soldiers on the ground for this war.
Yeah, that is not a skirmish on a border. That's a full on. Yeah, I think you could classify that by any definition as a war, yeah, for sure. Yeah,
how long has it been since Saudi Arabia was at war?
There was what we kind of called it a war. It was a skirmish in 2009 that we actually fought these Houthis. And this is the funny part. We fought the Houthis in 2009, I believe, with the skirmishes on the border, and we did give them some difficult times, and we lost 100 soldiers. But then we were actually fighting them in support of the ex-Yemeni president, who is now an ally of the Houthis.
Whoa. Well, that worked out great for everyone then.
Yep, exactly. People are so pissed of that president right now. You should see the name calling that Saudis are giving to that guy. And he was also... the Houthis bombed him while he was praying in a mosque. The president almost died, and he was airlifted to Saudi Arabia, where he was saved by operations and so on, and went back as the president. And this is the thanks we get.
So why did he ally himself with his former enemies? Then is it just he wants to get back into power and he's
they're not gonna.
I don't know anything about the conflict, but I can't imagine that they're gonna. If they win, they're just gonna go, all right, go ahead, sit down. It's your throne now.
No, definitely they won't. But I'm assuming he's just was hoping that after supporting them and they win, they would be so weak enough that he could overthrow them and take power.
Yeah. And that sums up our, you know, appreciation of the conflicts in the Middle East.
Yeah, welcome to Middle East.
All right. You mentioned the land tax thing as well.
Oh, yeah, that's a huge deal in Saudi right now. That happened, I think, 2 weeks ago. Of course, as you remember the last podcast, as I was asking people, what is tax? And
what is this strange foreign concept you speak of?
And they're still not calling it tax.
Ah.
Yeah, officially it's not called tax. It's a land charge. They're charging you for land.
Okay.
And basically what the problem is in Saudi Arabia, we have a huge problem with housing. We have this concept where people usually buy land and they just keep it on the side. Maybe in 10, 20, 30, 50 years, the price would go high enough that they decide to sell it.
Ah. So isn't there a thing where I seem... Sorry for interrupting, yeah, sure. But I've heard from Northern Africa, a lot of constructors or landowners start buildings. And as long as there's a building being constructed, they don't have to pay as much tax or something like that. So they start the construction and then they just stop and don't pay tax for that reason. I'm guessing it's the same kind of point.
Yeah, something similar. So right now, this is a huge problem. You actually come to, if you come to any city in Saudi, for example, Riyadh, the capital, if you go even to the oldest neighborhoods in the city, which is should be completely built up, you would find at least 10% of that neighborhood undeveloped empty land because people refuse to develop them. And that's made a huge crisis in land in these cities. So the new regulations are they're going to impose tax, a charge on land that is not developed within the city limits. So if you own land, you have to pay every year a fee or a tax on it until you start developing it. The regulations, the exact regulations are not out, but basically something similar to what you just said is going to happen in place of empty land. People will start developing something unless the regulations are a lot more clear and strict.
Mm. It sounds like domain squatting, Patrick, a little bit to me.
Yeah, that's basically what it is.
Yeah, it's like somebody saying, oh, I bought this domain. Maybe somebody will buy it one day and I'll just never do anything with it. And it'll just sit here and languish until somebody does something with it. So this sounds like a strategy to curb that, but I don't like how vague it is.
You know? But I guess it's not...
The regulations are not out yet. They just announced they are going to start imposing this. We're still waiting for the exact regulations and rules.
It sounds like... It actually isn't so much a tax as a way to fix an urbanism problem. And I guess the way to people's moral is through their wallet. So that's what they're doing. But it doesn't seem like it's a way to actually bring in more money for the state because they need it. It's more of a way to influence.
Well, as soon as it's imposed, I expect the state is going to get lots of money for at least the first 2 years. Lots of money.
But does it need it, though? You have all that oil.
With the oil prices going down and the huge amount of money the country is spending on the infrastructure and everything. I can say for a fact that Saudi government has been aggressive and we do have tax for foreign corporations do pay tax in Saudi and for Saudi companies pay a religious tax called zakat. And in the last year, the Saudi government has been extremely aggressive in collecting those and making sure everybody pays them.
So, but you know what that means, though. I'm sure Scott, with his Americanism, is going to tell you once that starts, it's the beginning and it doesn't end. You know, the taxes, they come in the beginning, they seem somewhat reasonable, and then...
No, everybody knows that. Everybody expects that we are going to pay it sooner or later, taxes. It's just people keep on hoping that it's not in their lifetime.
Yeah, they want to keep pushing it off. It's funny because we freak out about taxes here quite a bit. I mean, it's part of our fundamental history. It's like this great, you know, separating factor between us and England in the founding days of this nation. But the irony is that, you know, everyone else pays more taxes than we do. Everyone pays higher prices for gas than we do. Like, we are pretty spoiled that way. We may spend, you know, 20 to 30% of our annual income on taxes on average or something. But that's more like, you know, where my sister is in Sweden, they're paying something like 65 to 75% of their annual income to taxes or some crazy thing. So it's not like we complain real loud about that stuff. Maybe that's what keeps it low, I guess. I don't know. But,
Let's be honest, Scott. You Americans are the second most spoiled people in this world after us in the Gulf states.
Yeah. No, I agree. I totally agree. And it's funny because, I mean, whatever, people are going to fight for what they fight for, or, you know, I don't mean fight like war fight, but we're going to, and maybe sometimes that, but we're going to tussle over what matters, and you know, people live where they live and have what they have. And so they have what they fight for. And I feel like, you know, taxation is a hardcore thing. But here's the thing that you guys are going to run into. If taxes have never been a thing and now they're going to be a thing and happen in your lifetime, there's going to be a similar outcry for what we refer to here as taxation with representation. And then they're going to want more of that. So if they're going to pay those taxes, they're going to want people who can influence in ways that present their desires as taxpayers. And there's
Point on that, Scott, because this is the story that we have been grew up to learn in our history about why we don't pay taxes, which the story goes, and as far as I know, this is an official story in this country, which is that when they found oil in Saudi Arabia, the king of Saudi Arabia at the time, the unifier, King Abdulaziz, met with all the heads of the country, of the tribal heads and every important person, and discussed with them the oil wealth. And it gave them two options. He said, either the oil wealth comes in and whatever we get, we divide it over you, or you commit that you don't want any of it. It goes all to the government. In exchange, we develop this country, we pay everything for you, and we never tax you.
Wow. That probably seemed like a good deal at the time.
Yeah. So if you think about it that way, if that's actually how things started, then now they're going to say, if there's tax, okay, that deal's no more. Now we have to have a say in all of these taxes.
Yeah. And I guarantee you there's a fundamental desire. If you're going to pay into something, you have to feel like you have a voice, even if sometimes it's artificially feeling like it, or it's a generalized voice. Like, you know, we get a congressman or a senator or something, and we hope they generally represent our needs and wants, but there's going to be a demand for that.
Yeah, and then you have something like when you go to and complain right now, well, that this road is underdeveloped, there's problems here or there, and we go to a government, are you paying anything from your pocket? We'll fix it whenever we feel like it. That's the response you usually get. And that's what people say, yeah, I'm not paying anything. But when you're paying tax, the next thing you're going to say is, you know what? Yes, I am paying for this. You have to fix it.
That's a really interesting angle. I didn't even think of it. But it might be, you know, the beginning of the will, at least, for some kind of representation. You're right. I'm sure it won't happen just for this land tax, but it might. It's a slippery slope.
Yeah.
All right. Last story we have today is Scott's crazy gun state going all insane for shooting people, hopefully in the head or the heart.
Well, that is the
hope.
Cliff Notes version of the story.
I thought Americans shoot each other every single day.
Not nearly as much as you'd think, but
oh, really? It's not like, because I've seen documentaries. I think the latest I've seen was called "The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly."
Is that the one? Yeah.
Yeah. It seemed like there was a good hefty amount of shooting in that one.
And realism in that.
Yeah. And your president in those movies, what's his name again? Clint Eastwood?
Yeah, Clint Eastwood.
Seemed like he wasn't foreign to the idea of getting his guns out. So I don't know what you're saying.
Yeah, well, I hate to break it to everybody, but gun violence and gun usage in this country is at an all-time low, which is nice. Everybody loves that. But it is a little bit weird because on the face of this, it's one of those stories that makes everybody go, what the hell's wrong with Utah? Yeehaw! And they just want to give us trouble for what we've done. And my reaction was the same. I'm a very sort of middle of the road, moderate, fiscal conservative, social liberal kind of dude in a state that, if you look at Salt Lake City, is extremely liberal. If you look anywhere else outside of the city, can be pretty conservative. So it's a complicated state in terms of its representation and laws and all this stuff. And it came out that Utah wanted to bring back and has in fact signed into law the firing squad, something it had outlawed years ago when it comes to executions of prisoners. So if you are on death row, which again, in some countries seems crazy at this point that we would have capital punishment, but we still do.
It's not crazy in Saudi Arabia.
No, definitely not.
No, definitely not. But in France, you know, the UK, there are places.
Yeah, a side note about this. However crazy it sounds, it might sound that it sounds like to us because we've done away with capital punishment for a while. I think.
Have you done that away completely with it?
Oh yeah, completely. There's
not even the military.
No capital punishment at all.
There's no little sneaky thing going on in the background, no little French. But,
well, no, I don't think so. I don't want to speak for, you know, there isn't. It's not legal. But I'm fairly sure that if you survey the entirety of the country or, you know, try to make something representative of this, there would be a majority of people thinking we need capital punishment. So it's kind of one of those issues where that makes... people who are very, everyone, that makes democracy uncomfortable. Because sure. It's one of those things where if you actually ask the people what they want, you probably wouldn't have the laws that you have. So,
this is true. It's true. And it's also a challenge, just period. I mean, here you are representing a country. I mean, not that you're representing France, but not in this show you are. You're representing a country who invented the guillotine, perhaps the cleanest, best way we've ever killed anybody for their crimes. But my point is that they were faced with the same kind of thing that any nation is faced with. And that is, what do you do with your worst citizens? What do you do with them? The ones that murder and rape and kill and do terrible things. What do you do with them? Do you donate all kinds of land, space, resources, money, taxes, and everything else to, you know, feeding them every day and giving them cable TV and having them live their life out in relative comfort compared to perhaps what they deserve for the kinds of crimes they've committed? Or do you, in some cases, let juries decide that, nope, they need to be off this planet and we're going to take them out of there? So it's a complicated issue, argument, problem, one where I have, like, I kind of have a foot in every pot. I don't really have any firm opinion on one side or the other. It is very hard for me to say absolutely 100% we should not have capital punishment, but I also am a big believer in doing everything you possibly can in every situation to avoid it.
I don't think we're going to solve it today.
We're not going to solve it today. But this thing with the Utah thing, to give people a little more clarity on it, it isn't just simply a bunch of cowboys sitting around a table going, you know what we ought to do, damn it. We ought to bring back. It didn't
and
work.
And you do know it's the fault of the Europeans, right?
Right. Of course it is. So here's the deal.
Yeah, actually, go ahead, because I'm curious. This is what I heard as well.
Yeah. So the European companies who make the lethal injection drugs that are used here in the States, they have a patent and they are the only place you can get the stuff. Okay. There are no generics. It is where you get the stuff.
That's too bad because generics, I hear, are much cheaper and they're you know, we ought to use them more in our Western society.
I completely agree. Who needs Viagra when I can get dingle growy big? So
dingle growy is an excellent name for a generic Viagra.
Really good. Yeah, I hope they do it. But anyway, because they are giving us less of it or not, or as in some cases my understanding is outright refusal, there's a real shortage of the stuff. So the law is this specifically: if that stuff's not available, then this is lawful. If you cannot get that done and the date comes up and there's no pardon for the poor soul who's going to go under the, you know, the execution, they will line up. How many guys is it? I had it right here. Governor Chu's and I found a whole list of this stuff. Well, anyway, I don't know the total guys, but they all stand up there. I think it's 10.
Two of them or three of them have bullets and the others have blanks, I think.
I think all of them have bullets except for one. Has a blank, but none of them know if they have the blank. That's the idea.
Yeah, so exactly.
They don't know if they're the killer or not, or the ones that did, you know, the bullet that was true. They shoot him in the heart. Out the guy goes. It is, in my opinion, a barbaric way to end somebody's life. But I don't know that it's that much more barbaric than any of the others. Certainly lethal injection is, you know, in theory, put you to sleep and you never feel a thing and you're out. But that is that is what they claim, and also does seem to be bear up in the facts a little bit, that this is a way of saying, look, okay, when we need this other alternative, we're not going to electrocute people anymore. We're not going to do, you know, we're not chopping their heads off. We're not doing this other terrible stuff. We're going to go to the next least, quote unquote, inoffensive way of ending an inmate's life, and that being the firing squad. So that's the idea behind the law. There's plenty of opposition to it, but most of that opposition are people that are opposed to capital punishment generally. And, you know, this drug thing is kind of an issue, and we're not the only state. Oklahoma still has it on the books. They can do firing squad if they want, although they never use it. My guess is we'll never use it. I think this is a pressure tactic to say, you know, well, you forced our hand. We have to have a backup plan. So give us those drugs, or else, you know, it's kind of weird and petty, but it feels like that's what they're doing. So anyway, yeah, that's going down. That's a thing. And it's always fun to be in the national, in some cases, international news with weird Utah shit that happens.
Indiana's taking over right now. So
yeah, Indiana. And that's the other thing, as I was tempted to bring up that Indiana thing, which was signed into law by Governor Mike Pence, which basically gave business owners who oppose homosexuality for religious reasons. So let's say you're a dude that owns a restaurant and says, I don't like them gays because I believe they're evil. You now are, you have the approval of both the law and the governor of Indiana to turn somebody away because you suspect they're gay or know they're gay. It sucks. It's a terrible law. I'm just going to come out and say it. Here's my social liberalism coming into play. It's a ridiculous law. And the backlash has been fierce. There are people pulling their conventions out. Gen Con is their biggest, big nerdy tabletop gaming convention. They've been there for 17, 10 years, whatever it is. I forget now. They're trying to get out of their contract, to get out of there. San Francisco's mayor made some deal where there couldn't be travel there using any city money or something, which I don't even know what that is. There must be some kind of program that gets people around the country for various things or whatever, but people are pulling out of events and major conventions, like I mentioned, to oppose this thing, as it is just blatant discrimination. And look, here's what I would say. The people who actually like this law are giving me a bad taste of hypocrisy, because they're the same people that want the government to stay out of their lives and to not impose laws on them and tax them too much and all this sort of thing. Yet here's a law. Here's the thing. If you want to be a restaurant owner and be a dick, then go ahead and turn people away for horrible reasons. It's your right to be a jerk. Okay. There should be consequences for that. Absolutely. There will be, but to have it be sanctioned by the government in that state, like sanctioned to be a discriminating butthole, that's where I'm really, where it's really rubbing me wrong, and where I think the hypocrisy comes in. You only want the government to step in and do this stuff when it suits you. That's ridiculous. And
well, I think the way they're presenting it is that it's about religious freedom, which I think in my opinion also it doesn't hold up, because if your religion allows you to do something that is deemed illegal or immoral, then the government just told you have the right to do it. So it's definitely a murky,
right,
you know, argument.
If a guy comes in with a bomb strapped to his body and says, in my religion, I believe that Jesus wants me to blow this mall up. Oh, well, come on in. It's Indiana. We believe in Indiana. You know, we believe in religious freedom. That is such bullcrap. Like,
even without going to that extreme, I think it's fairly easy to understand that this kind of reasoning doesn't hold up to the most basic, reasoning, and that it is a way of masquerading, pleasing some extremes into, you know, it's masquerading it into making it about freedom, which
this thing is just gonna evolve into being worse and worse. But personally, I think if you're an individual business owner, if you don't want to serve someone, it's up to you. There shouldn't be a law saying that you can or you can't. It's up to you. And anyway, if I'm a client, why would I want to bother and even give a guy that would not want me there the profit and my business?
You just explained it exactly the way I feel about it. And there is what you just laid out as a scenario is exactly how it already is and should be. Those people should be free to go in there or not go in there. The people who own it should be free to say no or not. If you want to be a complete jerk and discriminate, fine. Discriminate yourself into
bank.
I don't care. I'm not saying it's good. I'm saying you can't stop that, Patrick. If there's going to be a douche, and I would disagree with Turkey. One point you just said. You said it's only going to get worse. I'm not sure about that.
Here's where it's going to, the law, this law can make things worse. Mm-hmm. Because if you're saying it's a religious freedom, then let's say a Sunni owner of a Sunni guy who owns a store does not want to serve a Shiite, or an extreme right-wing Christian who doesn't believe in Jews would refuse to serve a Jew. Those are religious freedom. That's basically it.
Yeah. And that's the point I was going to make it even more... Godwin pointy without going to World War II. If you start saying, well, some cracker in the middle of nowhere says he doesn't want to serve black people. Mm-hmm. And yes, you can't say, you know, it might be taking it to extreme because you don't see a religion that says you thou shalt not fraternize with the colored gentlemen and ladies.
Have you ever met the Ku Klux Klan?
Well, it's not. That's the thing. I don't think it's a religion. However, Scientology is sometimes considered as one, and that's also. But anyway, above all of this, what concerns me the most is there are laws against discrimination, and in the previous situation where you guys, Scott, you were saying it was basically the same. If Jerkoff, douchebag business owner doesn't want to hire gay people or Arabs or, you know, black people or Sunnis or Jews or whatever, there could have been a lawsuit, and that was a discriminatory practice that I believe would have been reprimanded.
Absolutely. That's my entire point is this is sanctioned discrimination. And that's why it's a big problem. But the heart we all need to have here, the reason I'm optimistic in the wake of this is the reaction to it has been swift and brutal. This is not 1960s Alabama where everybody's sort of idly just lets stuff happen that seems bad. This is everybody very quickly and very, very demonstrably saying, look, that is jacked up, dude. You all need to repeal that piece of crap law. And that guy, if he wants to discriminate, he needs to get sued like everybody else. He needs to get bankrupted because he sucks. Like all the natural things that happen in everyday concourse of business need to happen. And screw this idea that the government somehow held his hand while he went and made his stance. It is ridiculous. Also, one last thing I would say about that guy and people like him, whoever that guy is, all right, because they exist. If you think that your religion hinges on whether or not you treat somebody else well, and I'm mostly speaking to fundamentalist Christians out there, I would remind you that Jesus himself went to the well and hung out with the hooker for a while, and everybody wanted him killed for it. Knock it off, you bunch of jackasses. There is absolutely nothing wrong with giving a cup of coffee to a gay dude. It isn't going to make you gay, all right? And you're not supporting the gay lifestyle by giving that guy a cup of coffee. Oh my gosh, I hate it so much.
It's funny. I don't think I've ever heard you so riled up, especially in those topics. I seem to remember Scott, who was a little bit more, I don't want to say balanced, because there's, I don't think there's a lot of balance in this debate, but you weren't usually so riled up. I'm curious to why it's making you.
I think I know what it is. I think I can tell you simply what it is. For me, as I get older, and as my kids have grown older, I'm more and more mindful of how important it is that they enter a world the best they can, where they are supported regardless of what their views might be, what their propensity toward religion or race or whatever might be. I want them to be in a world where people respect each other. Gosh dang it, that's it. I mean, that's it. Mm. And so I don't care what the thing is. You know, we've taught them from the very beginning. There's two things. Okay, let's look at it this way. I was telling Nick this. If he walks into a place and he sees a grown 65-year-old man in a dress, okay, your gut reaction is going to be, oh, whoa, a dude in a dress. That's a normal human thing to go, whoa, that's different. That's different than I expected to see when I walked into this store or whatever. But then there needs to be this other part of him that says, well, each their own. None of my business. Probably nice guy. I should say hi. Oh, he is totally nice guy. What a cool dude. I'm glad I took the time to get past my initial human reaction bias and get to the next level, which is, you know, let's take our natural tendencies and tuck them away a little bit and look a little bit deeper, a little bit further, and notice that not everything is black and white. That is the entire mantra of my parenthood towards my children. And as I've gotten older and as I'm sending them out there and I hear about things like this, I'm like, no, that is not part of the plan. open, available, awesome, nice. It's not hard to do. Just don't, I mean, honestly, it's that whole, I don't want to offend anybody, but don't be a dick. That's it. Just don't be a dick.
I can only say amen to that, Scott. Yeah. You know, it's interesting. I've recently come across a TV show called Banshee. I don't know if you've watched it. It's kind of scandalous in the sense that it's.
Is it an American show or what is it?
Yeah, it's on Cinemax.
Oh,
so there you go.
I forgot Skinemax even existed anymore. But all right.
So it's a show that is full of lots of sex and violence. Mm.
So it was Game of Thrones?
No, it's actually a lot, quote unquote, worse in that sense, or better for those who like those things. It's a show where the sex verges on pornography. You never see genitalia. You don't see, you know, vaginas and penises, but that's basically where they stop, where they
thank
put
you,
a stop.
By the way, can I just thank you for clarifying what genitalia is?
Hey, you know, I don't know exactly how much your Mormon faith teaches you, Scott. No, I you know, you might be unschooled in those ways.
Go ahead.
So it's a show where definitely there's a lot of that, and there's a lot of violence as well. There's gun violence and fist fights that are the most raw and visceral that I've ever seen in any show. And when I saw the first episode, I thought, this is crap. Like, it's not crap, but it's so lowbrow. It's something that I'm going to watch for an episode or two. It's kind of amusing. It's not bad, but it's so much sex and violence for the sake of sex and violence. I'm not going to watch more than an episode. And I ended up watching a little bit more because there was something there and I wasn't quite sure what it was. But ultimately, after the first season, I watched the entire first season, I realized that there's a lot of the characters are fully realized. They have motivations. They're people. They have strange. They're all, you know, psychopaths that believe every problem is solved with violence. But it's an action, you know, TV show, so that's to be expected. So
I thought it was a porno TV show.
No, it's I'm saying the sex scenes verge on pornography.
Sure.
And so, but the characters are interesting. It's sort of a video game like environment almost. The guy, the main hero, is this incredible badass that beats up everyone who stands in his way and that can never be stopped. And it's a really like interesting, violent, raw, badass show. But the thing I wanted to get to is that in that show, there's one character called Job, which I think is the most interesting character I've seen on TV in the past few years, if not ever. It's this Korean dude who is an expert hacker and, as everyone on that show, a like magical martial artist that will destroy anyone that stands in his way, who also happens to be a cross-dresser. And, like, he's very effeminate. He is most certainly gay, but he is just, like, that's the character he is in that show. And in the show, no one cares. Of course, it's kind of, that's what made me think of it, Scott, what you said. It's like initially yourself as the viewer and the characters, when they come across him, they're like, whoa, what's this thing? What's the deal here? Mm-hmm. They're taken aback. And
so,
then
so Patrick,
after...
it's basically a real life anime series.
Yeah, basically, yes. That's kind of what it is. Yeah. That's kind of what it is. And that guy, Job, so after that, they just interact with him. And he's just, that's who he is, right? And he is weird, but it's just, it's what works for him. And it doesn't make him, you know, contagious or any. And if you don't care, he's just part of the crew, and no one cares that he's sometimes wearing a fabulous dress or sometimes has makeup like you see in Fashion Week on female models or stuff like that. And it's just ultimately that show that appeals to our most basic instincts of violence and sex has more inclusion and understanding than a lot of the other shows I've seen. So
part of that, you think part of the reason that works is, or part of the reason they do it is to say, it's almost shocking to say that it isn't shocking. You know what I'm trying to say here? Like there's a subtle approach.
Possibly.
Imagine it this way. It's like, here's a scene in Game of Thrones where there are 50 naked ladies just walking around and nobody seems to even notice. Like they're just having dialogue. Everyone's hanging out. There's important political things going on, but in the background, a bunch of naked ladies, nobody seems to notice this at all. That is a deliberate way of not shocking, but it's a deliberate way of saying, look at this naked ladies. Nobody cares. Whoa, look at that. That's pretty auteur, man. That's crazy. Isn't it, do you think maybe some of that's going on? I'm not saying it is, but do you think some of that is like, this guy's openly gay and none of us care? And wow, it's also shocking because the show is so shocking.
I don't think that's the case. I think in the case of Game of Thrones, there's a little bit of showing titties, and that's what people want to see. I think in the case of this one, it's so outrageous that it can't not be a little bit of a statement. Yes, it's shocking, and yes, it's shock value, but it's also a little bit of a damn it, he's like this and no one cares. And it shows a little bit of intelligence in the way, you know, the show as a whole is so well-rounded. It used to be that we lived in a world where there was intelligent things and stupid things, and the stupid things were cars, you know, going really fast and explosions in movies and, you know, and that kind of thing. And the intelligent thing was black and white movies about people telling you how miserable they are. Mm-hmm. And now it's so much more blurred, especially on TV. I think in this case, it's very clever writers that know what they're doing, creating a show that is both all of those pulpy things and a sort of anime it's sort of a modern far west anime kind of thing, and at the same time, intelligently written and interesting. So
interesting. Well, I may have to check it out. I love the idea that they basically I mean, it does. It almost sounds like Pulp Fiction, the show, in a lot of ways.
Kind of, yeah.
I guess, it's time for me to torrent it.
As is not frowned upon in your country, I suppose, because they don't care.
Yeah.
But yeah, so anyway, it's a really interesting show. I've been singing its praises for weeks, and I think it's definitely not for children, definitely not. It's actually not for most people, because it's, don't think there's some intelligent message in it. It's just violence, raw violence, and that's the main thing.
Well represented gay dude.
And
I like
the one, well, and the guy is so good. Anyway, but it really, to bring it back to the initial, to the thing that brought me to that image, it's that idea that this guy, as strange and foreign to us as he might seem, you know, he's not hurting anyone. He's, except when he's breaking people's faces for, you know, no good reason. But he's not hurting anyone really by being a weird cross-dresser. And he's cool enough. He's just this guy. And I think it says exactly what you were saying, what you were telling Nick. And I think there's a lot of wisdom in it. And it hurts me a little bit to say that Scott is very wise, but I guess he is.
So. Yeah, I'll take it when I get it from Patrick. That's fine. I mean, it's one of the things. It's like I'll disagree with people on issues or whatever, but at the end of the day, like this, that's why the show is, and I'm, you know, this is a little Inception moment. There's a reason the Phileas Club has always rung an important bell for me, which is this represents a bunch of very diverse locations and people from those locations talking about diverse stories from those places and diverse opinions about the issues that are going on. Yet look how we're doing it with relative ease. Even with, you know, there hasn't been a lot today, but even when there are big disagreements, this is like, there's a forum for this, and there's a forum for everybody to have that. It doesn't always have to be kick the gays out or
that. Well, even without going there
or whatever,
yeah. You know,
whatever
the even issue. Going to that extreme, or to the issue of, you know, gay people, it's true. It's one of the reasons I do the show. I think I want to show that there is a way of discussing things with people you disagree with, or that you, you know, don't have a lot in common with, without descending into, you know, yelling matches or complete just, well, in that case, we agree to disagree and we never speak again. And, you know, that's not, of course, there is a space for that, but there's
yelling matches are fun. Come
no,
on.
I agree. Yeah. Sure.
And they've happened on this show and they've happened on lots of things. These are words, and exchanging them is a healthy thing. And it can give people insight they didn't have before and perspectives they didn't know. And to me, that's really invaluable stuff. So I guess all I'm saying is, how about the more of this first and less of the terrorist did it, get your gun, let's go. You know what I mean? Like, it's just, you gotta back down and have the conversation and open your mind a bit, and that's it.
And that's why this show is so important and why you should give me money on Patreon.
Yeah.
Patreon.com/TheFileasClub is when you can support. Is where
money
you can support,
to support the Patrick, the money grabbing marching Frenchman.
Exactly, that's the one. But anyway, yeah, I guess this is going to bring us to the conclusion of the show. We've been rambling on for a little bit.
I have one thing.
Oh, okay. Yes, please.
Did you hear about this Saudi and Swedish problem?
Swedish.
Yeah.
Oh, I love it. My sister's in Sweden. I love Swedish stories right now.
You didn't hear that, Patrick?
I didn't. And my wife is Swedish speaking Finn, so I should have. Please tell me. so I can impress her when we finish.
This thing, I think you should have heard about it because it's even something that you're passionate about.
Okay.
So Sweden just got their foreign minister is a feminist lady, who came out in public and condemned Saudi Arabia for its human rights violations and all of that. And Saudi got so pissed, they pulled their ambassador from Sweden. They banned visa issuance for businesses from Swedish businessmen, are not allowed to visit Saudi and so on. It was getting to the point that all relationships would have been cut. Anyway, today they returned their ambassador, so everything is back to normal, apparently. Oh, but we almost shut down IKEA here.
I was going to say, right, chia, no more meatballs.
You know, the more surprising thing is that you have IKEA in Saudi Arabia. It's kind of, I don't know, it's a little bit crazy. I always imagine, you know, Riyadh being something of a desert town. Well, it is, but, you know, with just...
All right, tell me one place in the world where there's no IKEA.
I guess that's true, but I don't know. I didn't see it in... So here's a question. Do you have all of the worldwide chains?
Almost.
Or only some of them? Like, do you have McDonald's with only halal meat? Or do you have, like, do you have The Gap? Do you have Starbucks?
Yep.
Wow.
Anything you can think of. We have Carrefour.
Oh, wow. That's a French supermarket chain.
Yeah.
Impressive. So you have everything.
Everything, almost. Almost everything.
Do you get the two most important Swedish exports, that being IKEA and Minecraft? Do you get the Minecraft there?
Yeah, they actually just started selling an Arabic version of the Minecraft book.
Oh, wow. All right. Jeez.
Well,
I wasn't even aware there was a book, so you get more Minecraft than we do. Wow.
You know, I really think that these kinds of things, as much as people lament the commercialization of everything and the chainification of everything, and the fact that they're, you know, where are the mom and pop stores? And we only have that chain crap that we, you know, it's the same everywhere. Yeah. I really think that it makes everything a little bit more familiar, and it brings people together a little bit, because imagine that the Saudis, who are half a world away from the, you know, the guys in Utah, are having a lot of this, at least some of the same experiences. And of course, there's going to be versions of different things, and some are not going to be exactly the same, but gosh darn it, they can go have a Big Mac at McDonald's, and that is something that is relatable to anyone anywhere in the world. I don't know.
Here's an example. You know, there in Mecca, the holy city of Mecca, there's actually a Starbucks there, but they use a different logo.
Oh, really? What is it? What's the difference?
Just remove the half-naked lady from the logo.
Starbucks logo.
You know, in
there's
in,
a trip right here. Oh, look at that! Yeah, it's like a little like a star or a boat or something.
Yeah, something like that.
It's cool. In France, we have some very, especially in Paris, we have some very strict urbanism building laws, and in some neighborhoods, the McDonald's had to change their the color, the red color of their logo and of the you know, the building decorations in order to fit the laws of the city. So that you had some very fancy looking McDonald's with a Bordeaux, like deep red logos. And it's just a little bit different in some of the neighborhoods.
Yeah. And Saudi Big Macs, by the way, are camel hump, right? Isn't that the meat they put in there? That's my understanding.
No, it's all beef. All beef.
Yeah, okay, okay.
All right. Okay, I guess that's going to be it for us today. Guys, it was wonderful to have you on the show. Can you please tell people where they can find your internet adventures? Starting with Turkey Albala.
Well, you can find me on Twitter at Turkey Albala, and that's basically what I am right now.
Excellent. Nice. Thank you, Turkey. And Scott, what about you?
Well, the best places to look would be frogpants.com, where there's always something happening and going on, lots of shows to listen to and cool content to find. And if they want to follow me on the daily and hear me talk about generic erectile dysfunction pills, they can find me on Twitter at Scott Johnson. I don't know what that sound was, but there you go.
It's probably an iMessage. I was thinking of my MacBook Pro that's on his way, on its way, I should say. I haven't met him yet, so it's not, it's still an it. Did you know that they send all of those from China?
Yeah.
I thought they had warehouses in Europe.
No, it comes from the factory directly.
They're super fast. Like I had to do an upgrade here recently too with a new Mac, and it got here 5 days ahead of schedule. And it's they are so efficient. I know the rest of the world suffers in their supply chains as a result. I'm sure of this, but Apple's supply chain is like weird dark magic. I don't know how they pull it off.
It's insane. And you know, I didn't realize, because I had always bought my iProducts in the Apple stores, but it went from, you know, China, from Shanghai to Korea to Kazakhstan. That was weird. To Poland, to Germany, and now it's stuck in Germany because apparently those dirty Germans don't work on Saturdays.
French do.
Sent his notebook to France until they've had the weekend off.
Well, what am I doing right now? I'm a professional podcaster. I'm working it Saturday, so there you go.
That's awesome.
Anyway, if you want to comment on the show, please do. You can do that at frenchspin.com. You'll find another show that I do on that site, a show about video games called Pixels, and I encourage you to listen to that as well. We put the news in context with a decent amount of analysis to sort of explain what's been happening and why, most importantly, it's been happening. And you can find me on Twitter at NotPatrick. As we were saying earlier, you can support the show at Patreon, at patreon.com/TheFiliusClub. If you think this show has any value at all, I would please encourage you to consider doing that. And thank you in advance for doing it. And that's going to be it for us today. We will be back in a month with another show that will hopefully, I can only dream, be as entertaining and interesting as this one. Thank you both for being on. Thank you everyone for listening. And we'll see you in a month. Bye.
Bye.
Turkey.
Ah, man. It's always a pleasure.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.